YouTube, what's going on? Oh man, I'm so excited for this episode. Again, I say that every time, but man, we got so many people that the Lord is just bringing to me that I get to interview and ask these questions and expose the darkness that the enemy is brought into this world. And so I'm really excited for it. And gosh, today's discussion is going to be man, it's going to be packed full of details. It's going to be packed full of information. And Carrie has an excellent testimony about how the Lord saved her out of some pretty dark stuff. And so I'm super excited to hear how Jesus is still working today in people's lives, developing that personal relationship with them. And so make sure that you guys stay tuned for this. It's going to be so good. Today's topic is going to be Wicca and satanic witchcraft. And so if you don't know anything about that, gosh, this topic is going to answer a lot, or this today's discussion is going to answer a lot of those questions. But before we get started, as you guys know, I've joined the Daily Renegade with Josh Peck, and he's putting in a lot of shows together on topics that you guys want. And so make sure that you guys consider becoming a member at the Daily Renegade. And we are developing this website, or Josh is developing this website, I should say, for a number of reasons. The first is that he's being censored on YouTube. And so, gosh, there's just so much information that we want to get you guys that we're not allowed to get you guys through YouTube. And so through becoming a member, you have access to all of that information. You have access to videos, to chats, to a message board, to articles that aren't posted anywhere else that no one else can see unless you're a member. And so we want to give you guys that opportunity to experience that and to find out all that information. So for $10 a month or $100 a year, you guys can become a member. So, and you can find that at in the description below this video. Also, make sure that you guys subscribe to this channel, click the bell. Like I said, we are being censored and shadow banned by YouTube. The algorithm doesn't like the information, excuse me, information we're putting out. So make sure that you guys share this content. It needs to get out. And through testimonies and interviews like this, you guys are getting the information you want. And it's all about truth. It's all about exposing the darkness. As Paul tells us in Ephesians chapter 5, take no part in the works of darkness, but instead expose them. And so that's what we're trying to do. And so without further ado, I'm going to introduce Carrie, and we'll hear from her powerful testimony. So Carrie Christian grew up in a church and came from a Christian upbringing. She was enticed into the occult by an event in her life, leading her down a road of darkness. She spent 23 years as a witch. 13 of those years, she served as a high priestess. Starting in Wicca and progressing into satanic witchcraft, she quickly spiraled into bondage. But God had a plan, sending Christians into her path to tell her that he loved her. After months of conviction by the Holy Spirit, she surrendered her life to God and was delivered from the clutches of darkness. She now speaks out about her years in witchcraft and the dangers of the occult involvement, exposing Satan's schemes and his ways of enticing others into the occult. Carrie, how's it going today?
It's going wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for the
Good.
opportunity to be on here.
Yes, I'm so excited for you. And you were telling me earlier that this is your first interview, I guess via Zoom or Skype or anything like that, right?
It is. Like I said, I'm a little nervous, but we got
No,
this.
it's going to go great, and I'm so excited to have you on. Man, I just it's interesting how I find some people, because I just look, on YouTube and on the web and other things and Facebook and all these different social media platforms, and it's really cool the people that I come across. And so I'm so glad that you decided to agree to this interview. And so I want to begin today by letting you tell your story. And you have quite the story just from the bio that we heard, being involved in Wicca and witchcraft and stuff like that. And I feel like it's kind of a taboo topic that the evangelical church isn't really aware of, and they aren't really sure what's practiced and who's really worshiped in these, And so I want you to explain some of that information as we go through your testimony. And so just start from wherever you see fit, maybe when you were a child, and tell us how what you were involved with.
My bio said I was raised in a Christian home, went to a Christian church. There was an event in my life that started, it happened when I was 7 years old. And this event that happened was used later. It didn't, you know, didn't affect me at that time that it happened, but later on it would be used by Satan to begin to entice me into the occult practices. But I was very close to my grandfather, and my grandfather had passed away. And I was staying at my grandmother's house, and, you know, I didn't go to his funeral because of my age and stuff. My family, you know, my parents didn't feel that, you know, we needed to be exposed to that, you know, remember him how he was and not have to see him, you know, in his coffin. So I was at her house that night, and I had my, you know, I was in the middle room, and I kept hearing somebody walking around in the dining room. And I thought it was my grandmother, and I kept saying, you know, calling out to her. I had got up to get a blanket. I was trying to tell her, you know, I'm going to bed. I just needed a blanket. She never responded. Well, two or three times, you know, I tried to say something to her. She never responded back. So I go to the doorway, and I look out of the doorway, and coming out of the dining room and walking down the hallway was my grandfather. Who just passed away. And he was walking. I mean, he was standing tall. He didn't have the oxygen tubes and everything in him like he had been the last time I'd seen him. He was carrying a coffee cup, which was the coffee cup he drank out of every morning. He walked down the hallway right past me, and he didn't acknowledge me, but he walked right past me and walked into the bathroom that was diagonal from where I was standing. And he put both of his hands on the sink, and he stared into the mirror. Of course, you know, that kind of shocked me. So I turned my back to him, you know, and I'm sitting there like, oh my goodness. So I turned my head again to kind of look behind me, and he was gone. So I walk kind of tiptoeing down the hallway into that bathroom, and I'm hollering for him. You know, I called him Papa. I was like, Papa, Papa. And he was nowhere to be found. But sitting on that bathroom sink was that coffee cup with a hot cup of coffee in it.
What?
I immediately flipped out. I screamed and I cried. My grandmother, who was in the bed this whole entire time, got out of her bed and come running. And I made her call my mom and dad. I went and sat out on the front porch, and I would not go back in her house. She made my mom and dad come and get me in the middle of the night because I would not go back in. I refused.
Wow.
So that event right there, you know, it was edged in my mind. You know, it buried itself somewhere inside of me. But
yeah,
you know, I continued in church. We were always there. Every time the door was open, we were there. If there was, you know, revivals and Bible school and Sunday service, Wednesday service, we were always there. But then when I was 12 years old, that event about seeing my pawball started me like kind of haunting me. And I was started having dreams about it, kind of like reliving it.
Yeah.
And so I went to my Sunday school teacher, and I asked her about it. And instead of, you know, kind of going in and explaining things to me, her response to me was, it was a demon. Don't ask questions. Don't think on it. Leave it alone. That was the answer I got. You know, and to a 12-year-old girl who grew up in church and was questioning things, and questioning this event, you know, I needed a more detailed explanation than that. So she kind of left me to my own devices, is kind of how it felt at that time. Then just so happened, and it, you know, God has a plan for your life, but, you know, and he has a plan and a purpose for you, but Satan has a plan and a purpose for you too. He has a plan to whatever God wants to do with your life, to derail it, you know. He has a plan too to derail whatever work God has for you.
Right.
And so, you know, here I am questioning, you know, why she answered me like that, questioning why I'd seen my papa after his death. And then I find out that one of my good friends, who I had grown quite close to, was a Satanist. Right there in my path, just seemed to just kind of, the path just kind of come together. And, you know, I had told him, I'd asked him some questions about, you know, why would I have seen him? Why, what did he want? You know, was he trying to tell me something? You know, it just didn't make sense to me. And so that friend was like, you know, I've got some books that you can read. What you need is a Ouija board. And, you know, to me, I'm like, I knew that you weren't supposed to mess with those things.
Yeah.
even at that age. And, you know, he was telling me, he said, you know, you can draw one on a piece of paper. You don't have to go buy one. You can draw it out. I'll show you how to do it. I'll teach you. So we literally sat out on the front porch one day and he was teaching me how to draw and use a Ouija board. And so I started doing that. I started reading these books that he gave me. And I started looking into ways that, you know, I could try to communicate with my papa to find out what he wanted. The whole time, I was still going to church, still going to church with my mom. And the whole time, I had this paper Ouija board I had made underneath my mattress.
Sorry to interrupt, but were you involved in a youth group at all? Or
yes, I was.
Yeah, and you didn't? Did you ask your pastor or talk to anyone in your youth group about this?
It was like after she gave me that kind of that blunt stop answer, it was like, do not look into this no further. Do not question it. This is what it is. Don't ask no further questions.
Okay.
So it kind of made me to where, okay, I'm not,
yeah,
you know, I'm not going to seek any other answers from anybody because they're not going to, they're going to give me the same answer, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So that's what, you know, Satan used to kind of spur my attention into finding the answer in a different way.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what started the whole spiral into darkness was that one event. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, after that was about 12, 13 years old, by 14 years old, I was actively practicing witchcraft. I did, like research on palm readings. I went and I had bought me some tarot cards and this friend of mine taught me how to use them. I had, you know, the crystals and, you know, all these things I kept hidden and it was surprising, you know, they were never found. I kept them hidden this whole entire time. And I started out in Wicca because it seems so innocent. You know, you can still, use the divination and, you know, use the tarot cards. You can use the Ouija board, but you know, they make you think you're not dealing with darkness necessarily. It's nature based. It's the God, it's the goddess.
Yeah.
You know, it's the maiden. It's the horned God, Yeah. Yeah.
Who did that remind you of?
That should have sparked something, you know, that should have sparked something.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes it seem like it's so innocent. So I really thought and was convinced at that time that I wasn't necessarily doing anything bad. Oh. I was like, you know, I'm not bowing down and calling out to Satan. I'm, you know, calling out to nature for help. And, you know, I started writing spells, you know, at 14 years old and I was writing them out. But, you know, I wrote them out to do good, you know, to do good for people or to help myself on a test or, you know, help a friend out. And I did not see, you know, where it was taking me.
Is this what's referred to as white magic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, and it's something like I consider, and a lot of people will argue that Wicca is not bad. It's not devil worship. It's not, you know, Satan's not in the craft. You know, Satan's name's never mentioned in any of these books that you can get on, you know, from Wicca.
Right.
But Wicca is a gateway. It is a what I would call a gateway religion. Like they say, you have gateway drugs. It's a gateway religion.
Okay.
It starts out innocent enough just to get you in there. But just like it affected me, it will eventually affect anybody who practices it because eventually you get to a point where you hit like a brick wall and you've got to go, to the other side. You've got to step a little bit further into it for a little bit more power, or you need an answer you can't seem to get. You're going to have to go a step further.
You know, it entices
so that gateway only goes so far and then it stops. And then you've got to step over the other side of that.
Yeah. So before you go on, I have a question for you. Let's see, you were trying to find this way to communicate with your grandfather who had passed away. And obviously, you know, the church wasn't providing any answers for you about what happened to your grandfather or why you saw this. Were you finding answers by what you were doing or why did you continue doing that? There was obviously some sort of fulfillment that you were getting through practicing this type of stuff. What happened?
You know, I never found the answer. After 23 years, I never found the answer to why he came to me at that age. But it's almost like, I mean, it's like a hook. And, you know, I can compare it to somebody who has like almost been on, you know, like they've been on drugs and, you know, you take one thing, but then at one thing, you know, you get hooked on it and it's so easy to get hooked on something. And then, you know, that thing becomes numb to you. So you got to go to something stronger and then to something stronger. Witchcraft is the same way. You know, like I got started in Wicca, and even though I knew deep down from being in church all my life, you know, and I, the kind of church I'm, you know, not about denominations or getting into any of that, but, you know, I grew up in a Pentecostal church, you know, they talked about this stuff quite often, you know, that you don't get involved in witchcraft and you don't do all this stuff. I knew that it was wrong, but yet I still did it. And it was like, it was enticing because it was like, you know, you dealt out the tarot cards and you were seeking an answer. And when you dealt out these tarot cards, there your answer was. I mean, everything that you seen fell right into what you were asking.
Wow.
So, you know, it was like, okay, you know, hey, this is working. Or somebody wants you to do a spell for them for something good. And you do that spell and hey, it works. And it's like, okay, this stuff, you know, it's working. I'm seeing, you know, some, so it can't be that bad because I, you know, I asked for good things for this person and these good things happened. Huh. Or I asked, you know, I used the tarot cards to ask for wisdom about a decision I needed to make and hey, it worked. And I chose that decision and it was a good result, you know, so that's how it kind of hooks you.
Right.
And you kind of can't, like, it's almost like you become obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It's almost like an obsession.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also strokes your ego, you know, because we as humans like to feel like we're in power, like we have the power, right? We have, and that's why I think the New Age is so attractive and like the law of attraction and all these name it and claim it gospel preachers and stuff, because it gives, it strokes your ego to where you are creating your reality. You are calling all this stuff. You're creating what's going on around you and it makes you feel powerful. And so that just like feeds that desire for more and more. Is that kind of what you felt?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. And then you've got people, you know, that person says, hey, she did this for me and it worked and it helped me. So then they tell other people and other people are coming and they're like begging for your help. And you know, you're starting to think, hey, you know, I can solve all these problems and I'm such a like wonderful, you know, wonderful person. And I'm doing all this good for everybody. So, you know, I didn't at first, especially with Wicca, you won't see nothing bad. You know, the bad won't manifest itself until you get to that end where you've got to cross over into something else.
Okay.
And that's when it'll start fully showing itself for what it is. I mean, it's all the same. Wicca, any tradition of witchcraft, there's 12 traditions of witchcraft that are noted. You know, any of those, Satanism, all of it. I mean, it's all darkness. It's all bad. But like I said, Wicca is a gateway. It's the innocent that pulls you in.
Okay.
And then once you get in and you get to that one point, you're starving for more power. You're starving for more attention. You're starving for more answers, but in order to get that answer, you're going to have to come over here to this side.
Yep.
And so, that's where the darkness and, you know, the evil starts to reveal itself.
Yeah. So you got started in Wicca and you obviously progressed through some sort of ranks, or how does progression in Wicca work?
Well, you've got different, you know, with Wicca, there's different kinds of, like I said, there's different traditions. There's 12 traditions in witchcraft altogether. Almost like, you know, the Christian church considers denominations, Wicca and witchcraft has traditions.
Okay.
And, you know, they each have their own set of beliefs. And that's the one thing about witchcraft, too, that, you know, people get drawn into is there's no set of rules.
Right.
Whatever, you know, the Wiccan creed is whatever, you know, whatever you will, if it harms none. And as long as it don't harm anybody, do whatever you want to do. It's okay. You know.
Gosh, so, that's so subjective.
Yeah, and I mean, it leaves the door open. So, you know, they feel, hey, I can join this religion. I'm not doing nothing necessarily bad because I'm worshiping nature and all this stuff. And there's no rules to have to follow, you know. So that entices people a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like with Christianity, you know, we have the Ten Commandments. We have a lot of rules and things that God set for us to follow. But, you know, if you think about it, God set those rules for our benefit.
Yep.
It's to keep us safe.
Yep.
It's not to keep you under his thumb. So, you're never going to do nothing or have any fun in your life because you're going to be under my thumb.
Exactly.
He gives you those things to keep you safe, you know, and to keep you in a good life and in peace. It's not to harm you.
Yep.
So, you know, but of course Satan wants to mock everything. So he's saying, hey, come over here. We don't have any rules. You know, you can come up here, you can do what you want, do what you want. Mm. And it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're okay with you. So that's, you know, that's an enticement into it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got those 12 traditions in Wicca, but then you've also got your solitary practicers who, you know, they're not a part of a coven. They practice witchcraft on their own. Mm. So when I first started out, I was started out as solitary.
Okay.
I wasn't part of a coven or anything.
Right.
Until I got into my 20s is when I actually joined to a coven.
Okay. And which coven did you join?
I'd rather not give their name. That's okay.
No, that's fine. That's perfectly okay. Fine.
They're still local to me.
Yeah.
I just don't want to draw attention to them.
That's perfectly okay. I guess where I was steering more with that is, I guess maybe some of the practices that this specific, you said there were 12 different, and 12 probably isn't a coincidence in the number, because as I understand too, covens are full, they have 12 members, right? And so get into some of those details. What things did you practice in this coven that you were a part of? And then how did you progress into the deeper, darker stuff, as you would say?
The coven that I was part of, you know, we had 12 members, 13 total, mm-hmm. because, you know, you have your high priestess,
right.
who would make the 13th.
Yep.
Covens do not have to have 13 members, but they have to have at least 3.
Yeah.
The when we started, we were doing, you know, a lot of the nature magic. You know, we did palm readings. We had our rituals and our gatherings together, where we would do rituals. We would celebrate the Sabbats and the Esbats, and we would do seances together. We would also offer our services to other people, you know, to the public. Mm. It was more nature-based, again, to where, you know, you're praying to the goddess, you're praying to the horn god. In nature, you're doing community service, you're going out into the parks and you're picking up trash together and, you know, stuff like that, because it's part of it that you need to do. You need to participate in some kind of nature preservation.
Right.
So, you know, you've got to go out and do something good, plant some flowers or something, you know, you've got to do something good. You know, and I was in that, those last, you know, for about 18 years total in that coven. But, you know, it even got to the point in that coven there that the nature stuff wasn't doing it for me. Mm. You know, the worship in nature, and it just got to where it was like I was craving something darker. You know, I didn't feel, it got to a point where, like I said, again, I got to the point where I felt like I wasn't getting the answers that I wanted. I wasn't getting, you know, the help that I needed from my spirit guides and from my guardians. And, you know, the guardians you have to call, and they're supposed to be your protectors, these spirits, mm-hmm. Which are not your guardian. We'll get into that later. You know, and it got to a point now, like that was the second step. And then it got to where, you know, I wasn't getting the answers and stuff there. And it was time to go on over to something else. You had to press into even more. Mm. But with the coven that I was in, I mean, it was mostly nature, mostly even colorful. There was no necessary harm done to anyone. You know, you would do spells to bring somebody's actions back onto them. Because in witchcraft, you know, whatever you do, is going to come back on you. So karma. If you wish harm on somebody, exactly. Yeah. If you wish harm on somebody, yeah. Is it worth it for what you're going to get in return? I mean, how bad do you dislike this person that you're willing to accept?
Yeah.
You know, the brunt of whatever you send to them. So, you know, you tried to, it was still played out like it was light and it was love and, you know, it was a sisterhood and it was, you know, still doing good things and you didn't see no harm in what you were doing. It was mostly celebrating the moon and celebrating nature and, you know, being with this group of people that had the same common, you know, goal and the same common mind as you. And, you know, you were just doing this innocent worship to these gods and these goddesses. And it was, you know, the next step is, you know, where it took me into a really bad, dark place.
Yeah.
You know, and at the whole time I thought, you know, that I controlled these spirits, that these spirits worked for me, that they were out for my good and they were there for my benefit. And, in the coven, you know, you have degrees and you obtain skills and you obtain trainings. You can do the trainings and skills on your own. You can do the trainings and the different skill sets with your coven. There's actually schools that you can go to and actual universities, and they're all over.
Yeah.
They're all over. That you can actually go to school and be, you know, paid and be trained and stuff just as if you would go to a university.
Harry Potter style?
Harry Potter style. Dude, I mean, seriously, Harry Potter style. But then, you know, as you learn these different skill sets, you go up in degrees, you know, so you have to have the experience, you know, the years and the experience, and then you obtain different skill sets. Are you able to do seances successfully? Are you able to do certain spells successfully? You know, the more that you're able to do the first step, then you know, as you progress, you can move up a degree.
Okay.
And then you're in that degree, and that degree could take you 10 years, it could take you 20 years, it could take you 5 years. You know, there's no set, just whenever you're able to obtain those skills and that experience.
Right, right.
You know, the faster you can move up.
So how many degrees are there?
There's three degrees.
3 degrees, okay.
And your third degree is eligible to be like a high priest or a high priestess.
Okay. Gosh, this sounds eerily similar to Freemasonry in the fact that there's like the entered apprentice, the blue, and then the master mason, right? And so it's similar to that.
It is strikingly similar.
Yeah.
And that would probably be a whole conversation to itself right there. It has a lot of striking similarities.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and when you go to be a high priest or high priestess, you know, you're initiated. You have to be initiated in, and you're initiated in by another high priest or high priestess.
Okay.
And
So what were what are duties that a high priestess would have within a coven?
You would organize events. And here lately, you know, right before, you know, I came out of it, you know, at first, everything was kind of hidden. You kept it secret. You didn't talk about it. You wasn't open about it. You didn't go around and say, hey, I'm a witch, you know. But right before I got out of it, and even now as we speak, it's acceptable. It's okay. So it started becoming more, you know, more okay and more accepted by society. So, you know, it even got to where they wanted us to have our events open to the public. You know, and I even had someone sometime ask me, they were like, can I come to one of these coven meetings? You know, can I come to one of these rituals and stuff? And I'm like, sure. You know?
Oh my gosh.
You know, so it was like, invite them in, let them see, you know, hey, we're having a good time, you know?
Yeah.
It's all innocent and we're all, you know, we're just having a good time. So please, by all means, come. And that was just another way to entice people in because, again, they didn't see what they were getting into and they didn't see the bondage.
Right.
You know, and when God, you honestly, you don't see, you don't understand until God starts to open your eyes and kind of remove those scales from your eyes. You don't see how deep and how in bondage that you are and how heavily yoked you are with this stuff.
Right. Yeah. So how did you get involved with the darker stuff? So you made it to a high priestess, right, in this coven. And were you approached by someone, or did you start seeking that stuff out by yourself?
I had remained friends throughout my teenage years and my adulthood with the Satanist who originally got me enticed into witchcraft to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Although the whole time he was in the darker side, you know, I chose to take a different route than him at that time, but you know, he was always there present in my life. And, you know, I had our paths once again crossed, and he was like telling me about, you know, hey, I've got my group. He had rose to a high priest, and he was a high priest of his own satanic coven. So he was an actual satanic high priest.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had invited me to one of their meetings, and of course I went. I did not tell my coven that I was high priestess of, that I was participating with them, because, and this might sound kind of strange to somebody, but like witches and Satanists, they don't really mix with each other much. So, you know, the witches want to keep themselves looking like, hey, we're doing innocent stuff. We're not messing with Satan. We're worshiping nature and stuff. So they don't want to be associated with the darker side, which is, you know, the Satanists. And, you know, there are some Satanists that say, hey, I don't worship Satan. We don't worship Satan. We just worship ourselves.
Yeah.
Satan don't care what you call him. You know, Satan don't care if you call him Sally and you worship him and put him in a little tutu. He don't care. As long as you're not worshiping God and following God, he doesn't care what you call him.
Yeah.
You know, you can call him a goddess. You know, you can call him Satan. You can call him yourself. We're not supposed to worship self.
Right. Right.
You know, so even the Satanists who say, hey, we don't worship Satan, we worship ourselves, you're still worshiping Satan.
Wow.
You know, there's no gray area when it comes between the two. You know, it's either God or it's Satan. And if you're not worshiping God and you're not serving God, then guess what? You're worshiping Satan, whether you realize it or not.
Right.
Now, you may not be putting on the black robe and kneeling in the pentagram and praying directly to him, but you're worshiping Satan. You are serving the devil if you are not following after the Lord.
That, you know, now that you're saying that, it makes so much more sense why God said you shouldn't have any other gods before him or establish any other idols before him, because you know, Satan is basically, and I guess he's like an individual entity, but he's also represented through what we worship elsewhere, right? In these wooden or stone idols that the Old Testament refers to, like he can be symbolic through that as well. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, we can worship ourselves and, you know, and be all about ourselves. And, you know, that you're doing satanic worship, but you don't even realize, you know, your eyes don't see that you're doing it. You know, you can worship your money and your material possessions, but that becomes your God.
Yeah.
If God is not your God and your treasure is not set in him and your treasure is set in the material things that you own, that is your God that you are putting before him.
Now that's powerful. You know, yeah.
Satan, like I said, Satan doesn't care what you call him.
Mm-hmm.
You can call him your material possessions. You can call him this wooden statue of Buddha over here.
Mm-hmm.
You can call him Vishnu. You can call him a goddess.
Yeah.
You can call him whatever you want to call him. As long as you're not serving Jesus, he's got you.
Oh my gosh.
Call him what you will. He doesn't care.
Yeah. So you went to this meeting and you told me just a few minutes or a couple seconds ago, actually, that, you know, witches and Satanists don't really mix well. So how did you feel going to this meeting? What was so enticing about it? Because you obviously then got involved more and more with it, right?
I had, and he was telling me, because we got in a conversation and I was telling him, you know, that I didn't feel like I had reached my full potential.
Mm.
You know, that I felt like I was capable of so much more and having so many more abilities and so, you know, being able to produce so much more in magical practices than what I was able to do.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, you know, you need to come and be with us for an evening. You know, let me show you how we do things. And let me open up some doors there for you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it enticed me to the point, like you said earlier, it was all about the power and what can you obtain, mm-hmm. and feeding that self,
yeah,
that hunger that, you know, that you get in yourself that, hey, I want to be the best. I want to be powerful. I want to be able to curse somebody that does me wrong and have them fall down. You know, I want to take stuff that, you know, I can't obtain on my own. I want, you know, if it takes darker to do it, then I got to the point where I was like, then so be it. You know, if it takes darker, let's go for it.
Yeah.
You know, and at that time, I mean, I had got so far into it. And it's hard for me to say, and it's even heartbreaking for me to say, is that I had no fear. I had no fear of what I was getting myself into at that point. I had no, I didn't resent anything that I did. It was like, the darker it was, the more hungry I was for it.
It's interesting that you say that, because it obviously means that now that you're looking on back on it, you should have been fearful.
I should have been terrified. I should have stopped. When that guy, and I've got a picture right here, because I use these pictures, because I take pictures when I go to churches and stuff, and I show them, you know, because people need to see, this is what this looks like. If this is in your house or something, get rid of it. When I seen this right here.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I should have ran.
Yeah.
I should have ran the other way. I should have ran to that altar that I grew up knowing about, and I should have ran to God that I knew was all powerful. Instead of running to this right here, a simple piece of paper, Satan used to cause my downfall, to cause my spiral into a hell that it took me a lot to get out of and to break free from. And if it wasn't for God, if it wasn't for Christ and His grace and His mercy, this right here would have took me to hell. I would not be here today telling you a simple paper.
You're making me tear up.
I mean, that's all it took. That's all it took. Satan used a piece of paper.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it took to entice me into witchcraft.
Oh my God.
You know, and that's how easy, if we don't keep our eyes open and we don't keep sober minded and watch over our kids.
Yeah.
Our teenagers today, this piece of paper, it'll show back up again.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk a little bit more about your progression into this, the satanic side of the witchcraft. What, did you end up leaving your coven while you were involved with this, or were you still involved and then because you said you had hid it kind of from your other members. Were you secretly going to these other meetings?
I was secretly going.
Okay.
I was still serving as a high priestess in the coven that I was over. And then I was going to, like, I would skip out of meetings and stuff and claim, you know, sickness or different things like that, just so I could go be, because the holidays would coincide with each other.
Right.
So, you know, there towards where I started getting more deeper with the Satanic Coven, you know, I started missing other events and stuff with my coven.
Yeah.
To be with them, because it was feeding that darkness.
Right.
That was in me and that I wanted.
Yeah.
The Satanic Coven is, I mean, it is, it's hard to put into words. It is dark. It is darkness. It is evil. I have experienced so much pain and emotional scars and mental scars and everything else from my time in there. You know, Satan, anything that you ask of Satan, even if you start in Wicca, you progress into different traditions of witchcraft, you progress into, you know, any type of satanic worship, anything you ask of Satan requires a price. He requires you pay the price. Unlike when Jesus paid the price for us, Satan requires you to pay the price.
Yeah.
You know, and whether you realize it or not, even if you're just in Wicca, you're paying a price. It's your soul, you're paying that price. But, I mean, you're paying a price.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Satanism, there are rituals that require bloodletting. There are spells that require blood. I have scars all over my body from where I have used bloodletting to gather blood for spells.
Mm-hmm.
When I was practicing in the Satanism. There are anything that you would hold precious, anything that's supposed to be precious, is used for guilt and for shame and for filth. Satan will take anything that's supposed to be precious and make it filthy.
Mm-hmm. Which is why porn is one of the biggest, money makers in the world, because God created sex to be a beautiful, a creative act, centered around Jesus. And Satan has just thwarted that to be this disgusting, evil, vile act, to make money.
In Satanism, there is a lot of sexual practices. There is a lot of orgies. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of, and sometimes it's willing, and sometimes it's even if you're not willing. I was raped when I was in there. I was raped. There was 5 Satanists at that time with a knife, a very sharp dagger to my neck. It was either you do it willingly or do it forcefully, but one way or another, you're going to do it. They don't give you much of a choice. It's, and what are you going to, when you get so far in it, they put so much fear in you. It's like, what are you going to do? Tell me no. Yeah. You're not going to leave here and won't, if you tell me no.
Yeah.
Even with like the sexual practices, in the darker magic and in Satanism, sex is used as like a transfer of demons, from one person to the other. And there's even rituals that require sex. In witchcraft, there are rituals that require sex. It's like a celebration. It's a way to welcome in the new solstice or, your certain rituals and certain spells that require that. Yeah. So no, you're taking something that's supposed to be of God and supposed to be beautiful between a man and a woman and married. And they've, it's turned into something that whatever you want to do, do it.
So and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but from the research that I've done, the stories that I've read, people say that demons are actually able to have sex with humans. Is that something you experienced, or can you speak to that at all?
You can experience it. I have. There are spells where you can invoke and conjure up the demons necessary to do this. And it, like I said before, just as with like the high priest, when these demons, if these spells are used and they're darker, all these spells are so dark. And it's to give you more power. So if that demon, has any type of sexual intercourse or anything with you, it's giving you more power.
Yeah.
It's to transfer something to you.
Yeah.
It's what you're made to believe is happening.
Yeah, right. Did these demons physically manifest in front of you, or I guess I don't know how that works, did they inhibit somebody?
They can enter in somebody. The high priest will actually, conjure them up, invoke them, and it can be done that way. And that's another way, like I was saying about the sex with the high priest to transfer of demons and different powers. That can be used that way. Or, they can manifest themselves. And a lot of people's going to say, there ain't no way that can happen. I guarantee it. I know for a fact that it can happen. I have seen many demon manifestations. And, like I said, the demons that I thought that I had control of towards the end there, when God started convicting me and I started, doubting what I was doing, and he started bringing back stuff to my memory from my childhood when I was in church, those demons that were supposed to be my guides and my guardians were the ones who were standing over my bed.
Wow.
Suffocating me. Those were the ones who were clawing me to death. I have pictures still where I was just clawed all the pieces.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, this is when I started, I was being convicted. God was, working on my heart. At that time, I didn't realize what was going on, but those demons turned on me, and I was being attacked. I was being suffocated in my sleep. I was held underwater in the bathtub.
Oh my gosh, man. And so if you're watching this, guys, the point that we're trying to make with this is that this stuff is real, and it's not something that you guys should be messing with. Like, if you're involved with Wicca, if you're involved with witchcraft or Satanism, and you're just the lower level, or even into Freemasonry, because Freemasonry, as Albert Pike said, they hide the deeper, darker stuff from the initiates, because that scares people off. And until you get that ego desire and that power trip going in yourself, you're not going to want to experience that. And so if you're involved in this, get out now. Like, this stuff is dangerous and it's scary. And parents and youth pastors, preachers, anyone watching this who's shepherding a flock, you need to be aware of this and watching out for your flock. Jesus wants us to be aware of this and to teach our flock about this so that they aren't enticed by the enemy, by Satan, by getting involved in these practices. And it starts innocently with, like Carrie just said, with a piece of paper. It can start by watching Harry Potter. It can start by any little thing that puts it in the mind of our children. It can start there, and you never know where it's going to go. And so, Carrie, let's talk a little bit about how you came saved. How did Jesus get you out of this darkness? And then I have a couple of other questions that I want to ask you.
This is the wonderful part.
Yes,
I agree. All of this. The grace and the mercy of God, that his love and how his hand can reach into the darkest places that you would think would never reach. You know, like I said, it probably went on from about 6 to 8 months before I actually came out and gave my life to God. I was being convicted by the Holy Spirit. I didn't realize at that time what was going on until after I got saved and I looked back.
Yeah.
You know, I started to develop a distaste for what I was doing. It was like, you know, when I participated in these sexual things and stuff like that, I started to feel guilt.
Yeah.
And I felt shame. And I was like, what's going on? Because I didn't, you know, any time before, I didn't care. You know, why am I feeling guilty about this? Why am I feeling like, you know, I'm dirty and I'm unclean, you know, and stuff? Why am I feeling like this? Yeah. You know, and I would try to do readings for people. I would have people come over and they would want, you know, a seance, or they would want tarot card readings. And, you know, I would try to do them for them. And it was just like, I would just tell them anything. Just, it was like I couldn't hear the spirits anymore that had talked to me before. It was like they were almost blocked. It was like I could hear them, but I couldn't understand what they were saying like I could before. It was almost something was blocking what they were saying. So I was like, I would just tell them whatever just to get them to leave my house.
Yeah.
You know, and I would put the cards up. The very last ritual that I did, and I will remember it until this day, I was in my ritual robe. I was in the middle of a pentagram. I had my altar set up in my house. I had a statue of Lucifer sitting on my altar. I had the pentagram. I had the candles. I had my offerings out. I had all this stuff. I was knelt in the middle of this pentagram in my ritual robe, and I was started saying, you know, what I needed to say, going through the motions, you know, calling the guardians, casting the circle, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then I just stopped. And it's like I my eyes opened and I kind of looked around, and I was knelt on my knees like this. And I looked up at the altar and I looked around and I was like, who am I even praying to?
Wow.
And I sat there for a minute, and then I got up, and it was like, it made me so angry because I was like, I don't even know who I'm praying to. Yeah. And I got up and I cleaned off that altar. I took that robe off. I threw it in the bottom of my closet floor, threw all that stuff, you know, in the corner of my room. And I was just like utterly disgusted that I couldn't, I just couldn't figure out what I was doing. Like, it was like, what in the world is happening to me? And during that time, God began to put people in my path. And like, there was a pastor that crossed paths with me. And, you know, I wanted to argue with him. I wanted to fight. I wanted to be confrontational. I wanted to make him so mad at me that he couldn't stand it. But every time he would see me, the only thing that he would have to say is, Jesus told me to tell you he loves you.
Wow.
And it would anger me. I'd be like, no, he doesn't. Don't you dare say that to me. Jesus doesn't love me. And he's like, yes, he does. He said to tell you he loves you. And I mean, that was just infuriate me. And I would go home. I would be driving my car home and I'm like, Jesus doesn't love me. Jesus doesn't love me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's crazy.
Well, that's what Satanists teach, right? That Jesus is this control freak that hates you and wants the worst for you, right?
Exactly. And I've even told this preacher, I mean, this is how confrontational that I was. I even told him, I said, give me the keys to your church. I said, I want to walk into your church, into your sanctuary. I said, I want to go to God on his grounds, and I want to walk up there and scream at him to the top of my lungs and tell him what I think about him.
Wow.
I mean, that's how much anger and stuff I had towards God. Yeah. And that preacher, he did everything that I wasn't expecting him to do. He reached out and handed me the keys. He said, here, go do it. And I was like, what? I was like, you're not supposed to let me. You know, he was like, here, that's what you feel you need to do. Go do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, just leave me alone. Just leave me alone. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, he went totally against the grain of how I was expecting a preacher to act towards me. You know, I was like, I wanted him to tell me that I was an abomination, that, you know, I was going to burn. And, you know, I was just, that's the kind of thing, not tell me Jesus loves me.
Yeah.
And he invited me to an Easter service. And I was like, I'm going to go just so he'll leave me alone and he'll quit asking me.
Yeah.
And what's sad is I took, and I'm just going to tell you the God's honest truth, I took 2 shots of tequila before I left my house to go to the Easter service. And I sat there in that church listening to that Easter service about Jesus and the cross. And, you know, I knew all this from a child, but I was sitting there listening to it. And it's just like, I could feel my face getting so hot. And I was like, God, how could you love me? I'm like, seriously, why would you love me? It's like, I blaspheme your name. I willingly bow to Satan and serve him. I call him my God. I do everything that you say not to do. I've broke every one of your 10 commandments. I'm like, why would you love me?
Yeah.
You know, and that's that, you know, and I just kept saying that over and over. I was like, I'm an abomination to you. You're supposed to hate me. You know, why would you love me? How could you love me? And I felt, and the one best way I can explain it is I felt a hug. I mean, it was like a warm surrounding hug around me. And I just broke down and started bawling and crying. And it was like a hug of love. And I know a lot of people, it might not make sense to you, I mean, but I'm telling you, it was like a hug of love. It's like God's love just went around me and just hugged me.
Yeah.
You know, and I just broke. So here was this big, bad high priest, this big, bad witch. And a one hug from God and those words, I love you, caused me to just melt, you know. And I'm like, okay, Lord, you know. And I went up to the altar and I told the preacher that was preaching there, I told him, I said, I'm a witch and I need to get saved. Wow. You know, and that, I gave my life to God at that altar that day on Easter Sunday. So.
Oh my gosh, that is so incredible. I love that story. Man, so the first question that I have that comes out of just this last portion of your story was, there was a lot of hatred towards God. Why do you think there was so much hatred? I mean, where did that come from?
You know, a lot of it comes from that because, you know, like I said, God's made to seem like, you know, he's not out for your good, that he's up there waiting to judge you, you know, that long, no matter what you do, you know, he's ready to just strike you dead at any time. You know, that's the kind of way that they, you know, made you feel. And then, you know, I had went through so much during those years in witchcraft, you know, even to the point where, you know, I had become pregnant and I had had an abortion, and I had become so angry at God because he didn't come in and drag me out of there.
Hmm.
You know, I had seen some woman's testimony in a post-abortion support group. And during that time, and I mean, I was a witch the whole time. And, you know, she had said that, you know, she was going there and that, you know, God sent somebody in her way to stop her. And that just made me so angry and just added more anger towards him because I was like, you know, why didn't you try to save me? Why didn't you, you know, try to save my child? Why didn't you send somebody to stop me? You know, so it was like anything that Satan could use to make me angry at God, he exacerbated, you know, any reason, you know, if my a family member got cancer, a family member died before their time or something like that, it was like, well, God doesn't care. Why would God take this person? You know, why would this, why would that? So anything that could cause anger towards God, it was like Satan personified it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had, you know, so much anger towards God. I mean, so much anger, you know, and it's still, I still cry when I, you know, and I'm praying and when I'm doing, you know, worship and stuff now, it's like, you know, Lord, I, you know, forgive me for the way that I used to be. And I know he does, but, you know, still, you know, I'm like, wow, you know, to know how much God loves you, to want to forgive you, that he would take somebody that had, you know, had so much hatred towards him and still pursue them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to dive into some of the details about the teachings and some of the practices, specifically, I guess maybe both of them practice that, but, about the holidays and stuff like, and the Sabbaths and the new moons and the equinoxes and the solstices, and what is the big deal with all of these dates? Why is this so important to, I think, both Wiccans and Satanists? Because from what I've researched, that there are high holiday days for Satanists who, and they may perform human sacrifices, at least animal sacrifices. And so what is the big deal with all these dates?
The dates, and, you know, in your research, I'm sure you saw that, you know, the dates for the Sabbath, they coincide with different, like, lunar and solar, the solar system.
Yeah.
And what it's believed is that these heightened times, when the solar system is a, you know, or the, you know, the moon's at a certain phase, or the lunar systems are at a certain phase, and where there are, you know, certain planets are lining up, that veil in between us and the spirit world is thinner. So, and you also gather more power, like almost like, you know, they look at the goddess or the god, the horn god can represent the moon, you know, that can be the god, and that's the form that he or she is taking.
Right.
So, you know, if the moon's full, that veil is thinner, and then that god is in its full power, who can assist you on your spell. So your spell and stuff is more powerful during a full moon, or during an eclipse or a blood moon or something like that. You know, you have more power to your spell. So your more serious spells, you know, they'll tell you to keep a watch on your calendar, and there's actually witches' calendars and witches' almanacs, and you can actually go on there and see, okay, the moon's going to be full this day. This is the day that I need to do this spell, or I want to ask for this, and I need to do this ritual to ask for this to happen.
Yeah.
Because this is when it's going to be most from it. Now, satanic holidays, satanic holidays will mock Christian holidays.
Yeah.
You know, that anything that God has that's good, Satan mocks it. You know, they have the black mass.
What is a black mass?
The black mass is a mockery of the crucifixion.
Yeah.
They actually will have somebody come through there like Jesus. And I mean, different, this isn't like a set thing, like all satanic covens do this, because they will all celebrate it in a different way. But, you know, they'll have Jesus come through, somebody dressed up like Jesus, and they'll mock him, and they'll spit on him, they'll throw feces at him, they'll urinate on him, do sexual things to this person. It's like mocking Jesus. Like, if this was Jesus walking in here, this is what we would do to him. I mean, very blasphemous, very blasphemous.
Yeah. It's, and it's like, from what I've seen it, or not seen, but, read, it mocks the, Catholic mass, right? Or does everything backwards that the Catholic mass would be, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And anything, I mean, anything, like I said, anything that God has that's good, they'll mock it.
Okay. Yeah.
They will mock it.
Yeah. So we got the black mass. What are some other satanic holidays?
You know, you've got Halloween, which is, you know, All Hallows Eve.
Yeah.
And more than anything, that becomes like a massive party, and it's just to celebrate, to celebrate death and to celebrate, you know, anytime, all the darkness, and for the veil being thinning. Now in witchcraft, All Hallows Eve is celebrated as like honor to the dead, your past loved ones.
Right.
And like, you know, at that time when I was a witch before I got into Satanism, you know, I would set an altar out and I would do a ritual and I would, you know, do the Ouija board and stuff, trying to communicate with ancestors and past loved ones. And you would set pictures of them out to kind of like honor them. So, you know, even though they try to make even something like that to seem innocent, you know, it's to honor those who have passed. And it's, you know, when the veil's thin, so if you want to talk to them, they'll come and commune with you. They'll come and walk around with you and everything because that veil's thin. So that's the time they can come back and forth. And
Okay. So this next one is a little controversial, and I just want to hear your opinion on it. On vampirism and lycanthropy, is that a practice that is practiced in Satanism?
Not necessarily, like they don't call it that, but the bloodletting, there is consumption of blood in Satanism. The high priest will bleed. He'll either bleed just openly and people will come by and just lick it, or they'll, you know, suck the blood off of him. They'll put their blood in chalice cups and pass it around for everybody to take a drink out of. Anytime, like, especially if like the orgies and stuff like that, the bloodletting, or what, you know, some people may call the vampirism and stuff, it's very sexual.
Yeah.
They make it very sexual. And, you know, the blood is your life source. And that's the way, you know, they kind of mock that, is I'm taking your life source and I'm drawing power from your life source. Yeah. You know, if you're drained of your blood, you can't live. So, you know, they're mocking it. It's almost, I'm taking your life. I'm consuming your life. And by consuming your life, I'm making myself more powerful.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not necessarily like called that, like vampirism in Satanism, but the practice is still the same.
Okay.
You know, as far as the consumption of blood.
And you didn't witness, is there like I guess with the lycanthropy, it's kind of more lending towards like shape shifting and stuff like that. Is that something that's real, that's doable?
Yes, it is. And I mean, it's something that is doable more like somebody who just starts in it, but like in Wiccan, they don't really, you know, address shape shifting, but like in witchcraft, you get the deeper levels of witchcraft, you get deeper levels of Satanism, is when you're going to be more able to practice that. You can also have your familiar spirit to shape shift for you. So like you can send you have a familiar spirit. You have almost like, call it what it is, it's a demon assigned to you.
Yeah.
And you know, you can send that demon to somebody and, you know, have them shape shift into a different shape. Wow. But as far as like shape shifting and astral projection, things like that, it is possible. It can be done. And it's more with the people who are deeper degree.
Yeah.
You know, because you're just starting out, you're not going to have the ability to do that. It's when you get deeper and you get more, it's not spirits, it's demonic. And it was, you know, I'm just going to call it what it is. The more demonic power that you obtain, the more demonic assistance that you obtain, the more that, you know, you communicate and invoke and stuff with the demonic spirits, the more you are able to do things.
Yeah.
That's why, like, if you're in it, and that's like what, you know, we talked about earlier, if you're in it and you want to shape shift or you want to astral project, you're going to have to go a little further. You're going to have to go deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's what you want to obtain. You're not going to get it right away.
Yeah.
But hey, we'll give it to you, but you're going to have to go this far to get it.
Yeah.
You know, and by the time you get that far, you go through a lot of stuff to get to those points.
And that kind of lends to my next question. I have two more questions before we end today. And the first one is piggybacking off of what you were just saying with being enticed by all this kind of stuff is there's two shows and movies, television series that I kind of want to ask you about, get your opinion about. The first is Harry Potter. And I mean, it was written by J.K. Rowling, and I don't know how much you know about her, but the other one is The Order, which is a Netflix series that just released on Netflix, all about this secret order at this university. It deals with basically what would I would call the Skull and Bone Society almost. And then you have this werewolf aspect to it as well, where this order and this werewolves are like fighting against each other. And, but the reason I bring that up is because in both in the show and in the movie series, it seems like that there's this enticement that goes on by like these higher ranking ones, almost provoking these younger people to want to experience more. And so like in Harry Potter, you know, you advance in years, you gain knowledge, you gain all this spell knowledge and stuff like that. And in The Order, it's similar how, you know, you have these higher up guys, you know, doing all these magic rituals in front of the younger ones who aren't at that advanced, but it's like, wow, I want to be able to do that. So yeah. What are your thoughts on like Harry Potter? And then I don't know if you've seen The Order, but on shows and movies like that, especially coming from a Christian worldview, what, how should we approach that? Should we even watch them, or what's your take on that?
You know, and a lot of people are not going to like what I have to say, but I mean, they can choose, you know, to hear or not to hear.
Yeah.
You know, this is coming from somebody who has 23 years experience in witchcraft and in Satanism. You know, when you got stuff like Harry Potter, The Order, Supernatural,
Yeah. You
know, the one of those, I think it's Netflix, has Lucifer, the series Lucifer.
Yeah.
You know, you've got practical magic, you've got The Craft, you've got all these movies, but let's take Harry Potter, for instance. You know, that's centered towards kids. You know, and young adults who are very susceptible to this stuff,
right.
You know, that's when their imaginations are at full bloom. That's when they're, you know, wondering and questioning and, you know, trying to understand things a little bit more. So when you expose them to that, you know, it causes their mind to wonder. And Harry Potter, the dangerous thing about it is that it makes it seem innocent. Just like as we talked about with Wicca and how it makes, you know, witchcraft seem innocent. Harry Potter does the same thing. And, you know, it makes it seem like it's fun. You can shift things. You can manipulate things to your will. You know, you can be this person. You can have these friends. You can have these abilities. You know, and a lot of people think, well, it's just a book. It's just a story. It's just a movie. You know, a kid or, you know, or even an adult who's susceptible and their mind is wandering and they look at that, that's going to cause them to research things and to get involved into things. And all it takes, like I said, is a piece of paper.
Yeah.
That could, you know, that's all it takes to start it. You know, so it makes it look innocent. It doesn't tell you about the darkness in it. It doesn't tell you that these things that you're manipulating with that little wand is going to turn around and try to rip you to shreds. It's going to hold you down in your bed and try to suffocate you. It doesn't, they don't tell you about, you know, the raping and the giving of yourself and, you know, all the having to cut yourself and, you know, the dark things like that. It doesn't show that in Harry Potter, but that's what's on the other side of that door.
Right.
You know, it's like you can hang out right there in the yard, like with Harry Potter and Wicca and stuff, but eventually you're going to have to come through that door.
Wow.
You know, that's a gateway. That's an opening. You know, and you step into Wicca, you step into anything like that that's pagan or New Age or the, you know, satanic, you are opening yourself up to a darkness that you cannot imagine.
Wow.
I could do, I mean, we would be on here for hours for me to totally explain what it's like to be in that stuff when it starts to reveal itself or what it truly is and what it always was.
Right.
From day one, from that piece of paper and that book he gave me, it started then. It was as dark then as it was, but I mean, it's a spiral, it's a bondage, and it doesn't end. So Harry Potter and shows like that, practical magic, makes it look so innocent. And, you know, it entices people to think that, hey, this is cool. I can do this. Or, you know, hey, what's so bad about this? They're doing good. They're not hurting anybody.
Right.
You know, it's extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just a movie. It's not just a book. And there's many more out there. You know, you got these Vampire Diaries and all this stuff. It's not okay. So, you know, to drink blood, you know, that's not okay.
Right. Yeah. And so from your experience, what do you think about J.K. Rowling? There's some controversy surrounding her about whether she's a witch or not. Like, what do you think?
You know, I had heard, and it's hearsay, you know, I can't prove any of it, but, you know, I had heard that she had some involvement in witchcraft. The thing that would surprise me is somebody to put a lot of knowledge into these without having some knowledge of witchcraft.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that there is a lot of things that are actually in the Harry Potter movies and the books that are actually, you know, that's actual witchcraft. That's actual, you know, things that can happen and, wow. You know, and words that can be spoken.
Right.
And it's, you know, that's how could that be written to such detail without any type of knowledge?
Right. And yeah, and that's what I've heard is that some of the words and spells that are used in the book and stuff are actual words or actual spells that witches use to do their will, basically. And so I was just curious about that because
there's actually one movie too I want to mention real quick because it was popular a couple of years ago and I know kids still watch it. The Princess and the Frog. The little, you know, innocent little Princess and the Frog. There is actual voodoo symbols. There is symbols in there that come from the Necronomicon, which is a demonic book that tells you how to invoke demons. These symbols that you're allowing your children to watch on TV and on these innocent little movies, these are actual symbols that are used in rituals to conjure demons.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm talking about, the innocent. You know, it makes it look so innocent. There's no big... But you're exposing your children to something that is actually, I mean, that is satanic as satanic gets.
Yeah. Gosh. We're not trying to convict you if you're watching this. We just want you to be aware and to be prayerful about it. And, you know, I'm becoming more and more prayerful as my son gets older. You know, he's 2.5, 3 years old and he likes to watch TV, but my wife and I are just so prayerful about what we let him watch because gosh, I sit down and watch one show for 10 minutes. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's like subliminal messaging in this show that's meant for 2-year-olds. Like, what is the actual message and meaning behind what's being taught? We can play it off as playful and innocent, but like Carrie's saying, it's a gateway and it provokes your curiosity into these occult things. And gosh, it's just so scary when we start going down that road. So Carrie, my last question for you, gosh, we could talk for hours. I would love to talk to you for hours, but my last question, I think maybe the most important question is how do we witness to people who are involved in Wicca and Satanism and witchcraft? I mean, because you were talking about how you were, you were confrontational, like you wanted to bring that fight. So what can we do what do you do as a Christian now to witness to Wiccans and Satanists and people involved in the occult?
You know, I had a lot of people try or attempt to witness to me when I was in witchcraft. And, you know, if they came at me confrontational and they were like, you could tell that they were, I'm going to tell you, it was an automatic shut off. I'm not going to hear nothing you have to say. I'm going to fight you back. We're going to argue until the end of the day. And
pride met pride.
Nobody's going to hear me. You know what I mean? You know, I'm going to be too busy arguing with you to hear anything you have to say.
Right.
You know, so I've had people try that, you know, scream in my face and, you know, all these things like that. When you got people who are like in Wicca and witchcraft, who haven't stepped into like the satanic side, they won't even recognize Satan. So when you come up to them and say, you worship the devil, they're like, no, we don't. Mm-hmm. We don't worship the devil. There's no devil in any of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so telling somebody that's in it, hey, you worship the devil, you worship the devil, they're not going to see that unless God reveals that to them.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it has to be, you know, explained that this God and this goddess that they worship and this nature, you know, that we should worship the creator instead of the creation, you know, and that this God and this goddess, it seems so innocent that it's, you know, adultery and it's, you know, a false God, you know, because when you scream at them and tell them they're worshiping the devil, they're never going to recognize that.
Right.
Unless, you know, because there is no, his name's never mentioned in any of the witchcraft books or anything. You never hear of Satan. And if they do call him anything, they call him Lucifer and they look at him as an angel and as of a light being, you know.
Yep.
He's not looked at as something that's evil. But to witness what Hal I was witness to, I think, was so profound and so powerful, because like I said, I was looking for a fight. I was looking for a confrontation. When he told me he was a preacher and he wanted to come over and talk to me, I was like, let's go. You know, I was ready and reared up for it. Yeah. But those simple words, Jesus loves you. I mean, that right there, yeah, it made me angry at first, but it was like I could not get those words out of my head. Wow. They played in my head at night when I was laying down to bed, Jesus loves you. And I would think over those words. And I mean, at first it would make me mad, you know, like, Jesus don't love me. Why would he want to love me? But just that simple fact that he loved me.
Yeah.
You know, and that that preacher was preaching on Easter. It was like, you know, he was preaching about the sacrifice that Jesus made for us, that he gave his life for us. And that he did it from love, mm-hmm. about his grace and his mercy. Right. You know, a Satanist knows they're going to hell. They're ready to go. They think it's going to be some big party down there. And yeah. The devil's going to make them some chief over hell, you know, or section of hell or something.
Yeah.
You know, screaming at a Satanist and telling them, you're going to go to hell. They don't care. They know that.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go to hell because you worship the devil. Yeah, they know that. But... you know, to tell them there's a God who loves you, that Jesus loves you, that he gave his life for you because he loves you.
Wow.
And that his grace and his mercy is sufficient to save you. That Jesus doesn't care what you've done. He doesn't care if you're a Satanist. He doesn't care if you're an alcoholic. He doesn't care if you're a drug addict. He doesn't care if you're a prostitute. He loves you and he wants you to come home.
Yes.
He wants to set you free. He wants to give you back what the enemy stole from you. You know, he wants to give you back that peace, because that's what Satan is. You know, he comes to steal, kill, and destroy. He takes your, when you're in all that stuff, I don't care if it's alcoholism, I don't care if it's prostitution, drug addiction, witchcraft, Satanism. Satan comes to steal your joy. He steals your peace. He steals your hope, you know, and tries to replace it with darkness and hopelessness. So to let people know that, you know, that Jesus wants to restore to you that peace and that hope. That he can bring a light and take that darkness away, and that you can be set free. We, you know, when Jesus steps in there, I don't care what chains have you bound.
Yeah.
They can't stand.
Wow.
He's there. I mean, he is the chain breaker. I mean, I was bound by so much, you know, not just in witchcraft and Satanism, you know, I had become an alcoholic amongst all that and, you know, everything else. And I mean, I can tell you, he is a chain breaker. Wow. He has set me free. You know, I'm not tormented by these things anymore. He's healed my heart where there was hurt and scars. You know, and I use these tattoos on me and these scars all over my body as a testimony, you know, to say, because I'll have people come up and they'll see these tattoos on me and they're like, hey, is that what I think it is? Or they'll say, hey, are you a witch? And I'm like, let me tell you his story.
You know, yes.
So he can use that, and he's such a healer. And I mean, he has totally just changed my life and totally healed me from all of it and set me free. So, I mean, I know that he is able, and I know that he is faithful and he is just, and that he does love each and every one. If somebody's watching this and you're in Satanism or you're in Wicca or witchcraft or, you know, whatever your situation may be, that Jesus does love you.
Wow.
And he wants to set you free and he wants to give you life. You don't have to live in that darkness. You do not have to be bound. Satan is a liar. Jesus does love you and he can set you free.
Oh my gosh. Amen. Oh man, that's powerful. And that'll preach. Have you considered becoming a preacher?
I'm actually taking some classes for evangelism. So we're going to.
Good. Gosh. Well, your story is powerful. And man, like I said, we could talk for hours. I might actually have you back on if you want to come back on. I'd love to dive into some more of this and maybe talk about some other things. So, but I think today, this is a good place to stop in how we witness to people who are involved in the occult and specifically in Satanism and Wicca, because man, they do get you guys, they get to some deep dark things that can create those huge chains. But our God, like Carrie said, is a chain breaker and he will set you free. And so reach out to me if you want to talk or if you have questions about this, or Carrie. Man, people are here for you, and Jesus does love you. And so thank you again, Carrie, for coming on today. Do you have anything else you'd like to share before we end our time?
I just want, you know, to let everybody know too, you know, if there's somebody that you're praying for, you know, I don't care what they're involved in. I don't care if they're not involved in anything. They're just lost. Mm-hmm. You know, don't ever give up praying for somebody. Don't ever think that somebody is too far gone that God can't reach them. You know, keep praying for him. He would leave the 99 to go find the one.
Yeah.
You know, he will leave the saints to go hunt that one down to bring it back to him.
Wow.
You know, so don't give up on your loved ones. Don't give up on your friends or your family, you know, regardless of what they're involved in, that God can still reach them. Pray for those involved in this stuff. Pray that, you know, people's eyes will be opened up. Wow. Because it's growing rampant, and it's the fastest growing religion in the United States right now.
Yep.
You know, so people's eyes need to be opened up. So we need to pray, you know, that people will see us for what it is.
Yep. Gosh, amen. So that'll do it for today. You guys know the saying, don't be lazy, do the research. We'll catch you on the next episode.